All right, here we are. Here we are. Another episode of Let There Be Talk. Today is Monday, December 9th. How the hell are you guys? Are you here? Are you tuned in? Are you listening? Thank you for joining the circus today. Here we are, episode number 507. And this will be kind of a handmade episode, this man, my guest today, Paul Altieri from Bob's Watches, he has definitely made something. He has made an explosive, incredible business out of selling watches. In just a 10-year time period, this man has become one of the biggest watch dealers in America, and his story is incredible. I absolutely loved having him on, and you know how I love watches. And listen, even if you don't like watches, you know it's not going to be just about watches. If you are a fan of Let There Be Talk, we are going to dig in to this man's life and find out exactly how he got into watches. What got him started? How did the business become successful? All that. And you know the answer usually is pure passion and hard work. So it's great to have Paul on. Before I do get into the episode, I want to give a shout out to some brand new Patreoners out there. If you do want to hear bonus episodes, they're on every Thursday. Patreon.com/Dean Delray. That's where you get all the bonus episodes. We got Molly Young, brand new Patreoner. And, oh man, what is this? Scythe Dev Team. Okay. Howie Arquahart. Man, it's so amazing, the people that tune into this. No one's named like John Smith. It's like Howie Arquahart. Anyway, I love you guys. Welcome aboard. How are you? Brand new Patreoners. Cool. Here's some upcoming gigs real quick, and then I'll get into the episode. December 12th, La Jolla Comedy Store. That's this week. I'm doing a Toys for Tots show Thursday night. December 21st, I'll be in Vegas with Bill Burr at the Cosmopolitan. The 27th of December, if you're up in the Sacramento area, going to be with Joey Diaz at the Coluso Casino. The 28th of December, Palace of Fine Arts, two shows with Joey Diaz. January 4th, I'm headlining in Fresno, and that's at the Tower Theater. January 13th through the 19th, Vegas Comedy Cellar. And a brand new date just came in here. Portsmouth. Is it Portsmouth? Yeah, it's Portsmouth. What am I talking about? Portsmouth, New Hampshire, March 13th and 14th. Those are the brand new dates up there right there. And also, you guys know it is holiday time. You're wondering what to get your favorite friend, your loved one or whatever. Don't be getting the same old stuff everybody gets. Here's what you're going to do. Get your friend, your lover, whatever, some CBD oil by CBD Lion. I'm telling you, this is going to be a great gift. People are all stressed out. Like, what do I get somebody? I don't want to get the same old thing. Get some CBD oil. Also, CBD Lion now has these brand new bath bombs that I've been rocking. Hell yeah. Smell good and get some CBD treatment. They got the gummies. They even got stuff for your pet. Maybe get Scooby a bottle of CBD oil for the pet. You got one of those cuckoo pets? Get it. I've been using the nonstop topical. They've got a brand new topical. It's like a roll-on, and it's 1,000 milligram, and this stuff works fantastic. Just roll it on wherever your aches and pains are, which lately for me seem to be fucking everywhere, man. I'm falling apart. CBDLion.com. Use the code DEAN, D-E-A-N, and get a giant discount. CBDLion.com. Use the code DEAN. Do it. These guys are the official sponsor of Let There Be Talk, and I absolutely love their stuff. I've been using the 900 milligram CBD lotion, and now the new 1,000 milligram roll-on. Fantastic stuff. Thank you, CBD Lion, for being so badass, and what a great holiday gift that will be. Yeah, Yeah, man. Hook your friend up with some healthy stuff instead of some cinnamon rolls or something. Get them some CBD. All right, let's get into it right here. Let's rock and roll this fantastic watch episode right here with my man Paul and Bob's Watches. Keep the candles lit. You're sitting in the John Mayer spot. You said you wanted to be in the John Mayer spot.
I feel pretty special.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I'm feeling it.
Yeah. Introduce yourself.
Oh, this is Paul Altieri. Dean, thanks for having me. Paul Altieri from Bob's Watches just came up. I know you've been trying to get me up here now for...
For like 2 years.
Probably 2 years, and I feel so bad. But I'm always busy. I've always got something going on.
Dude, I get
it. But I didn't want to say no one more time. And even though this is a... kind of a bad time for me to be coming with the holidays.
Yeah.
I'm here, man. Thanks for having me.
After you canceled last week, what are you wearing today? Just a sub, huh?
I've got a Rolex Submariner. This is my pride and joy.
Yeah?
Probably my favorite go-to watch, only because it's special to me. I bought it after I had my second kid in 1998.
Wow.
Way before I was even in the business. You can tell the bezel is kind of turned.
It's all faded. It looks great. Faded. For 1998.
It looks great. Yeah, but it's been everywhere with me. Swimming, diving, surfing.
That's what they're supposed to be.
Golfing. It's a tool watch. Man, and I beat the crap out of it, and it still looks great.
Still got the box and papers?
No.
No?
I wish I did.
Yep. Why? I always want to ask people, what do they do?
You know what? My wife throws everything out, so... Chances are, but I can't blame her for this. I think I just misplaced it.
That's insane. You know how important box and papers are now.
But I'm gonna tell you something that's gonna probably kill you even more. I polished it.
Oh!
Accidentally, I sent it in because it stopped working.
Oh yeah, and they do it.
By the way, I've serviced it once in 20 years.
Once,
just once. Wow. It was like 3 years ago. Sent it in, and I accidentally forgot to put on the slip: "Do not polish." Because I always do that like in big letters.
Yep.
And it came back polished. And when it came back, I went, oh, no.
Oh.
But it's only lightly polished, but still.
Yeah, you still got the edges on the
bevel.
The case. Yeah, the bevel.
Yeah,
that's the most important thing about a watch. Yeah. It's funny, like when I was first getting into collecting, you don't even know that kind of stuff, like polished case and everything back in the 80s. You know, you got the kid working at Benbridge. He just takes it to the polisher, like that dude on Rodney Dangerfield's shoes on Caddyshack, just
grinding it away,
just rounding the edges. Intern at Benbridge or wherever it was, you know, and you just go, "Here, your watch looks like new," and you don't even know. And then later, people teach you. They go, "Ooh, heavily polished case."
Yeah.
Thank God for people like Bo Gorey at Los Angeles Watchworks, where they can get it back to normal.
Yep, Bo's incredible.
He's insane.
Really, really good work. But you know, it's only been the last 5 years, maybe, that people really started saying, "Do not polish it. Don't touch it. Keep it original."
Right.
So when all of my watches come in, I know you know about our operation a little bit. But when they come in, I don't touch them. I put them in a little plastic sleeve protector, put the label on it, when I bought it, who I bought it from, the story of him, you know, where he was from. And I like to keep the old watches because they're, to me, they're better than money. Money is ugly, but the watches are cool to look at.
It's
but
so
I won't
true.
Touch them. I won't even service them. I just rather just leave them the way they are.
Yeah. Let's get a little bit. You're 63 years old. Let's get into your life story because it's great. You weren't even selling watches years ago, and now you are one of, I think, the biggest watch sellers in the States. Bob's Watches on Instagram. Is that correct? Are you the biggest, or what is it?
Well, you know, we're all private companies, Dean, so I really don't have the exact answer. I think we're at least one of the biggest. We probably are the biggest, specifically with Rolex. But, you know, I've always liked watches, even growing up as a kid. And I think you probably have heard this story. Maybe your folks have listening at home. But growing up, I was a caddy at a private golf club.
And where? Orange County or something?
Rhode Island. I was
Rhode
born,
Island.
Born and raised in New England. Yep. Went to college in Boston. I came out here in 1980. So this is my quick 10-minute story. Came out here just to visit for 2 weeks to get a job out here and stayed. Never went back. But as a caddy, 14, maybe 15 years old, a lot of the guys were good golfers. Some of them were really cool guys as well. And a lot of them wore Rolex watch. So growing up as a kid, it became like an aspirational thing for me. So I said, you know what? Someday when I make it, I'm going to get myself a Rolex watch. And I've always liked them. Now, I like Patek. I know you're a Patek guy. I know you like AP as well.
Yep.
You still want to get that 15-202?
Absolutely.
You still looking?
Oh, God. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to stop.
You know, John had tons of words of wisdom last week or week before.
Yep.
When did you have John on? And, you know, John's been a watch guy for a long time, so he's seen what's going on. And yeah, it's a little crazy right now with prices.
I've been a watch guy since, I think, 81.
Yeah.
You know, I got turned on to it by James Bond. He wore the sub, the big crown. And from then on, I've said it over and over on the podcast, but all my luxury taste comes from Bond. Cars, watches, exotic resorts and cities and all that. It's really, really insane what's going on in the watch world.
What is the AP 15202? Because I know you know watches 15202 really well. Retail. What's full retail on that watch?
The retail on it is $24,900 and eBay is $40,000, which is dumb.
Oh, but you can't get it retail, right?
You can't get it retail unless you're... that's a thing that blows my mind. Unless you buy like... it's like Ferrari with any of these people now. It seems like you got to buy like three or four of the watches that don't sell
to get on the list.
Right, the list, which is unfortunate too, because what it's really done is created this insanity of the gray market. And the gray market is a lot of people, they get on lists somehow, and then they get the watch, and then they sell it to get something else they want.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Well, I think you're calling it the flipper market.
The flipper market,
yeah,
right.
John was talking about that as well.
Right.
The flipper market. Guys that get on the list, wait it out a little bit. Maybe they've got a good connection. Buy the watch at full retail, and then flip it for a quick, you know, 2X or 3X.
Yeah.
It's good money.
It is good money, but it... I mean, somewhere along the way, and we'll get into this, but I've talked to it with multiple people, you know, that Rolex gets that new CEO or whatever, or whoever the head guy, the boss, and then he's like, we're just going to make these hard to get also. Because 5 years ago, you could walk into any Benbridge in America, and every watch would be in there except the Daytona.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, the Sub, the Explorer, the GMT, the Milgauss, the all stainless watches were in there, and then all of a sudden they just disappeared. And the market was really soft for used watches. You could get a GMT all day long for $4,500 in the 90s, a 90s GMT. And that's just 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And now they're 15, 12. If they got box and papers, they're, you know, whatever.
It's certainly going crazy. So I get, here's my take on it.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody at Rolex sat around a table and just said, you know what, we're going to drive the market crazy, we're going to make less. I think it's just the economy worldwide, the global economy is booming right now. Rolex is in, you know, high demand everywhere, Dubai, Asia, America, certainly, even Europe as well. And Rolex is not like Nike. They're not like Apple.
Right.
They won't turn on the factories and stop making more if the demand is there to meet the demand. I think Rolex is going to make 800,000 watches a year or 900, whatever that number is, and that's it. You know, and that's all they're going to make. So now you walk in a local AD in Nashville or Miami or Dallas, and you walk in and half the sport models are not even there. There's
no sport models.
None.
The cases are empty. I travel every week. I go to the stores. They're empty. But I still...
and I think it's a classic supply-demand. There's more demand than there is supply. They're making that finite supply, and that's it. The ADs can't be happy about it. I know they want them.
That got to be horrible.
It's driving consumers crazy because the prices just keep going up. And by the way, they're staying up, too. I know there's a little softness here and there occasionally.
Right.
But by and large, they're all up 20%, 30% every year.
Yeah.
Now, can it keep going? People keep talking about, quote, the bubble. I don't see us in a bubble. I really don't.
I think that Rolex could easily stop making a lot of the... When you go into the places, there's a million gold watches, but they don't want to do that because it's like they don't want to just be a stainless watch company. I get that. But it is an interesting mystery. Everybody has their own spin on it. If you read all the watch websites, the blogs, everybody's like, oh, well, Rolex said that there was a shortage of the stainless steel. And then, it takes, you know, 8 months to make a Skydweller movement. Just all this kind of stuff. And whatever it is, it's great for Rolex. It's not great for the ADs because you go in there and they look miserable. They're just sitting there like, here comes another guy. Too,
this thing called the internet came along.
Right.
And that's not good for the ADs as well. So they're kind of in a weird situation right now because they've got this shortage of supply they've got to deal with. On top of that, the internet, they're not allowed to sell on the internet. And they know that's kind of eating into their business as well. But you know, it's a good business to be in. Rolex is real strong, unlike the typical bubble. You know, Rolex has been around 100 years. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
They're affordable luxury. They're a really good product. Rolex is really good at what they do, but I will tell you that whatever they're doing, whatever's really going on, they're very secretive. No one knows.
No one knows.
They're like the Greta Garbo of, you know, the watch industry. No one knows really what's going on, but they're very good at what they do. The product is outstanding, and people like it.
The product is unbelievable these days. I think the new GMT Pepsi and the Batman are the greatest body, the new body shape, since the vintage watches, because they went through that phase where they were fat and blocky, the jumbo case. And it was like a hamburger on your wrist. It didn't sit right to me. Yeah. And now, the way this GMT sits, they're going to have to retool the sub this year to get it rocking like that. Because these are thinner now again. And they sit well and they look like a vintage watch. And I think what they're doing is they're smart to mine their historic legacy. Go back, like, this is what people love. They love a nice, slim case. It's, you know, that Panerai thing and Frank Mueller and everything blew it out for a while of giant watches. And that is long gone now.
Yeah, they're tapering them down a little bit, but you're right. You're absolutely right. The new models that are coming out, Rolex is going back historically, and the new models today are vintage inspired by some of the great classic designs of the 60s, the 70s, and I love them. I love them.
They tested, you see, they test the waters with Tudor. They, like, Tudor, the Black Bay 58 is a masterpiece watch.
Yep.
As far as size, look, the gilt dial, the incredible, Rosetta on the winder, all that. So people go crazy for that kind of stuff. The Monaco. Tudor's really hitting home runs also, so they can see what's going on.
Yeah, really strong.
Yeah, it's wild. Now, let's get into how you get into the business.
When I first got in the business, though, just historically, just to touch on that a little bit more, we were selling value, basically. We were selling value because we were 30% less than what a watch would be retail.
Right.
And nowadays, and it didn't happen overnight, it took a little bit of time, gradually. But today, we're selling availability. We're not really selling value.
I get it.
You walk in a store and you can't get it, so you come to my site.
Yep.
And we might have one or two or three, but we don't have dozens of them either. As soon as they go on the site, they sell fairly quickly.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot like right now. I want a Toyota 4Runner, an Army Green. And these fucking dealers are charging $5,000 more, an actual Toyota dealer.
And they're getting it.
I know, I go, this is a 4Runner. And so everything, there's this.
Everything's hyped up.
Everything's hyped up. And I think that's because of Instagram and the internet. People are like, look at this. It's great. There's only, I saw a Challenger yesterday at the car show. it's a 50-year anniversary of the Challenger, and they said they only made 70. And right away I go, oh, well, that's going to be double the price.
Is it?
Well, it will be.
It will be, right?
There's no, if you're only making 70 of a Mopar,
that,
and then these people get them, they keep them inside their garage, they never enjoy them, and it gets that into
Well, Porsche has done that to a great success.
100%.
100%.
GT2 RS. Yep. Can't get that car
to get
right
them.
Now.
Porsche's been terrific at coming out with incredible designs and limited, and they're hard to get as well worldwide.
Yep.
The only thing I will get back to a little bit about the bubble, this thing called the bubble, it's not a bubble. The only thing that I see interrupting all of this, and this gets into cars, art, real estate, is interest rates. If the economy tanks, interest rates go way up, then all bets are off everything. Not just watches.
Fannie Mae, 06, everything was dust in the dust. You could get a Rolex for a dollar, man. You could get a Harley Davidson for a dollar. People are just like, I'm upside down in this shit loan, and I've lost everything. So that is true.
So I will tell you, if the economy gets a little soft, things start to turn a little bit, you know, you will see a little bit of a gradual price softening across the board, though. Not just watches. Of course, this is just my opinion, but...
Yeah.
We've seen it before. It's not the first time. Well, rates go up and valuations go down with assets.
What I've learned from that in the last 10 years is when it does go down, if you don't grab it, the billionaires do. They'll come in and buy like every watch or every condo or every Porsche GT2, and they'll just sit on that shit. Because they have so much money, and then boom, they double and triple their money later.
Yeah.
It's really wild. The old rich get richer. But yeah, if you have money, grab stuff while it's soft.
Yeah.
Because you've got the money to do it.
You know, in every watch I've sold, vintage mostly vintage Rolex, in the last 5 years, I kick myself now because they've all gone up 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%. But you know, you can't keep everything.
You can't. That's like Norm's rare guitars. Norm sold a bunch of guitars over the last 10 years at money where he made big money. Like I was talking to Paul Stanley from Kiss. He goes, I sold my 59 Paul and I made great money. He probably made 50 grand. But now... the next guy that sells, it's going to make like 150, 200 grand. It's crazy.
How many years has that been?
I don't know when he sold that. He didn't tell me the year, but those guitars are just insane now, the 59. Yeah, and it's so a lot like...
Is that a bubble? Do you think that's...
I think...
the vintage guitar?
The 59s have kind of softened a little bit, but they're always going to be worth crazy money. There's never going to be the day where you're going to get a Newman or a 59 Les Paul or a 70 Porsche for, oh God, look at this guy's hurt and I got it for 20 grand. That's not going to ever happen ever again. So, you know, people, and I don't like the people that complain like, fuck all that. It's just life. You don't like it, just don't complain, move on.
Yep.
It's crazy.
No, we do get those occasional comments back.
Yeah.
But prices, in all fairness, prices have gotten a little crazy.
Yeah, they have. They have. So a Patek 5711 Nautilus should not be 70 grand for a stainless watch. Now, if you buy one at 70, you're going to lose on that watch. There's no way in hell it'll stay at 70.
But here's the thing. If you want it, that's what the market is
today. You've got to get it.
You got to pay up or, you know, or wait around. And a lot of people don't want to wait. They want it now. You know, life is short. Time is valuable, and that's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think you should be buying watches for investment value anyways.
I don't either.
If you want it and you really like it and you study the market and that's the one you want, buy it. If it's 20 grand, 10 grand, 40 grand, and who cares if it goes down 20% or if it goes up 20?
Yeah,
you're not
got
buying it for an investment. You're buying it to wear it.
Well, also,
it's something you wanted, whether it's a car.
Yeah.
Right?
But I look at it as if you wanted it at retail, you'd have to buy two or three shitty watches. They're not shitty, but ones you don't want. Anyway, so skip all that and just pay the premium, and then you don't have a bunch of watches you're trying to sell on eBay or whatever that are like logs that won't sell, you know, gold something.
But the Nautilus has always been at a huge premium to like a Rolex, a comparable Rolex.
Well, even going back 20, 30 years ago, no one wanted it. No, really? 10 years ago? Oh, God. The Aquanaut? I'll tell you a story.
Well, the Aquanaut's a different story, but the Nautilus, to me, I've always wanted one. But it's always been a little bit pricey.
But it wasn't where it is now.
Not today. No.
It'd be like $3,000 up, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll take it. Yeah. Not $40,000.
Now you can't touch them. And the Patek people, I'll tell you, are generally a lot pickier when it comes to pre-owned vintage.
Oh, yeah.
They inspect it. They'll inspect it for 2 hours and look at every little scratch. And these watches are made to be worn. They're steel for a reason. They're supposed to be durable, and you're supposed to wear them and enjoy them. Rolex collectors and buyers are a little bit more forgiving, not quite as picky and finicky.
They don't have the palate, I think. A lot of people are just buying the Rolex just to have.
They want to wear it. They want to enjoy it, you know? Right. Buy a car, you want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I bought a GMT. I'll give you for example. Bought a GMT Blueberry.
Oh, yeah.
Old stock.
Oh, new old stock.
Never won.
Whoa.
Okay? So now, what am I going to do with this watch, Dean?
Can't wear it.
I can't wear it.
Because that's the value of the new old stock.
Now, fortunately for me, I had three other ones, but this was new old stock. To be able to put that in your hand and look at it, it's pretty incredible. But you can't enjoy it.
Nope.
So I finally just sold it for what I paid 2 years later because I just, you know, I want to enjoy it. I want to be able to put it on my wrist and wear it. So one day, I grabbed it. I was at a bank meeting. So I put the watch on. I Instagrammed it. I put it on my wrist, Instagrammed it, and sure enough, one of my followers on Instagram commented back private message with the F word saying, how could you wear that? It's new old stock. It's not to be worn. It shouldn't be on your wrist.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I couldn't even take a photo of it.
Wow.
Is that crazy? Man, come on. I'm just taking a photo of it.
Yeah.
And by the way, too, I am, whenever I do that with a Patek or a Panerai or an Omega, by the way, I've got an amazing Omega I just picked up. I love Omega.
Yeah.
It's a Tropical 2915. I paid big, big money for it. I can't even tell you because it's a lot of money. But I love it. But whenever I take a photo on Instagram of, you know, an AP or an Omega or anything that's non-Rolex, I get shit for it. I'll get like Instagram comments back like, you know, what are you doing with that? It's like, I can't wear a non-Rolex brand.
Oh, that's
kind of
absurd.
That's kind of funny. I've been branded personally as a Rolex guy, and it's like, I have to always have a Rolex on my wrist.
Oh, that's absurd.
Is that crazy?
Right? I mean, you know, you're a watch guy. But let's get into how you start doing this.
So when I got out of college in 1980, I was trying to get a job in real estate down in Florida. And while I was down in Florida waiting, this was before cell phones, you know, before the internet, there was no email back then. You literally waited by the phone.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I applied for this job. It was a big development company down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And so I was waiting to get the job. I'd always loved real estate. And my buddy was out here at Brentwood, not far from where we're sitting right now. And he was representing his company's jewelry company. And so he was out here alone, and he kept calling guys saying, come on out here, visit me, you're gonna love it. Where do you see it out here? The beaches are great. So he finally convinced me, and I said, you know what, I really should stay by the phone trying to get a job in real estate. But he said, come on out, just come out for 2 weeks. So I got a 2-week round trip ticket, come out here, visit him. At that time, he had moved down to Torrance, California.
Torrance, that's a different move from Brentwood.
Heck yeah, night and day.
Yeah.
So he was kind of a casual guy, so I think Torrance fit him actually better. So I move out, I come out here to visit him, 2-week vacation. I'm going back. I'm trying to get a job, remember, in real estate. And while I'm out here, I find out I didn't get the job. My mom called me and said, you know what, they just called, you didn't get the job. And I was kind of bummed at the time, and I said, you know what, I might as well just stay here. And so people So I never went back. I didn't use that round trip ticket.
Wow. You just left shit at home. You didn't have anything?
Well, people say that to me all the time, and I didn't have any shit.
Yeah.
Everything I owned was in that gym bag.
That's nuts. You're like the minimalist.
40 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was 23 years old.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I didn't have shit when I was 23. A couple posters on the wall.
So he was in the jewelry business. So I hung around for a couple of years with him, just hanging around, doing some things. And then I got in the jewelry business. He and I opened up a jewelry store in L.A. We did jewelry, diamonds. We did a little bit of watches. So that's how I got, you know, fascinated by watches. I loved
it. Where was the store?
L.A.
I know, but what area?
Well, the first store we opened up was in UCLA. We actually opened up a little counter, a jewelry counter, inside.
In the college?
In the bookstore.
Wow.
Yeah,
inside. On the campus?
In the campus, yeah.
This is nuts.
I'm not sure we had permission to do it, but we did it.
Whoa.
My buddy was dating the manager of the store at that time. And so we went in there, and that's kind of how we got our start. It was crazy.
That's crazy.
But neck chain. So back in 1978, 79, 80, gold was high, if you remember.
Oh, yeah. Remember it got up there like crazy. Yeah. And now it's...
And everybody was wearing a neck chain, S chains and Z chains and Y chains and box chains and whatnot. And then nugget chains were coming out as well. You remember nugget chains?
Oh, absolutely.
They even made nugget Rolexes too, by the way. Remember the nugget?
I do remember that.
Rolex, they called it a bark finish.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, no one really wants them now. But anyway, so here I am 40 years later doing watches. So the way I got into watches was I had sold my last company. I was in the consumer lending business, and I was looking for something to do, and I wanted to do something on the internet. I looked at everything from candy to flowers online to women's shoes, and I kept coming back to watches, mostly Rolex watches, because no one was really doing it right. And back then in 2008 and 2009, believe it or not, eBay and Craigslist were like the only real place you could go online and buy a used Rolex, or pre-owned.
Yeah.
But no one was really doing it right, like in a transparent way. So I, after talking to customers and doing a little bit of market research, you know, I found out that no customers really didn't know what their watch was worth. There was no Kelley Blue Book. There was no way you could go and see what it was worth. And so I said, wouldn't it be great if you could post the buy and the sell price so people knew? You want to buy a 16610? I hate to talk numbers, but you know numbers, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. People in the business, we're always talking 16610.
It's all numbers.
6542, or what they are.
1016.
1016, 1019.
5711.
It's crazy. But back then, no one knew what, for instance, any of these references were worth, whether you were buying or selling. So in 2010, I had a really smart intern with me at the time, Greg. And so we said, you know, let's do watches. And we bought this guy, Bob Thompson, who was getting ready to retire. We bought his company.
In Orange County?
He was actually operating in Virginia.
Oh, whoa.
But I had met Bob at a pocket watch show years ago. And I had called Bob and said, you know, Bob, what are you going to do with this company? He said, you know what, I'm getting ready to retire. Why don't you buy my company? And I really didn't want to do pocket watches. He did a little bit of Elgin. You know Elgin.
Yep.
Did a little bit of Elgin, Bulova, Longines, you know, sort of lower end watches.
And pocket watches, like and no one rocks that. It's
dead.
So,
it was dead.
Dead, yeah.
Still dead years later. So anyways, I bought his website, took it down.
So you were buying his website. That was his business.
Website.
No brick or mortar.
No, he actually had a little bit of, he would go show to show to show. No store.
Gotcha.
No store. He would go.
Why would you buy that? Just for the reputation? Or why couldn't you just start your own website?
We could have. We had all these great names like Swiss Watch, blah, 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 and thewatchexperts.com. And we had all kinds of great names. Ethical Watches was one of them we were going to launch as well. But looking back, there were two things. One is that he was looking to get out, and he had an ongoing website and a name. So that was one. And two, it's like, you know what? It already had some kind of track record in Google.
Right.
So rather than starting something brand new, fresh, there was some value there. So we bought the site, minimal amount of money. We paid him $8,000. He got to keep all his pocket watches. He probably still has them if you want to call them.
Yeah.
He probably still has them all. God, that market's been dead for 20 years, 30 years. It's too bad. Anyways, we took the website down for about 2 months, retooled it with this format, this buy-sell format, where we would post all the prices. And here we are 10 years later. I had no idea it would get this big. I probably would have thought twice about calling it Bob's.
Yeah.
If I had known it was going to get this big.
Because everybody calls you Bob.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Bob, I get that a lot.
Yeah. So when you put the website up after a couple months of being down, and you put it up, how long was it? A couple hours? Did someone hit you and go, hey, I got a watch I want to sell? How long? Was it a week? Does it start cooking?
You want me to give you the truth or can I lie?
Yeah, no, the truth.
So we worked on it for about 2 to 3 months. We launched it in July of 2010. Now, I think on paper and concept, this is a hit. I mean, in my mind, I thought this was going to be great. It's the Kelley Blue Book. It's going to be like Auto Trader, where people can see. It's all about trust. It's all about honesty. We went out to make a lot of money. It wasn't anything. We didn't say like, oh, if we do this, we're going to make a ton of money. No, it was never about that.
Yeah,
it was
the watches like, weren't big, like hot in 10. Like not, I said, you could get a GMT in 2010 for $3,500.
They were around. So it wasn't really about making a ton of money, because we were posting both prices, the buy and sell, so people could see the spread, the commission that we were making. It was really about just doing something right that needed to be done. No one was doing it.
Yeah.
There was no safe, trust, honest place back in 2009. So the honest truth is we launched in July of 2010 and the phone didn't ring. We didn't sell a watch or buy a watch for the first week.
Oh,
and so now I'm scratching my head. And I don't think we even got a few phone calls because no one knew us.
Yeah.
Really. Even though Bob had had this company around since the 90s. So we sat around, and so now I'm starting to scratch my head and say, damn, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this thing isn't going to work. It seemed so good. It seemed like a viable idea.
Yeah.
But sure enough, the second week, I think we got one phone call. And third week or fourth week, I don't remember. I should probably, for posterity's sake, have tracked all this, but I didn't. And we finally bought our first watch.
What was it? Do you remember?
It was a GMT.
GMT, what, 80s or something?
I think it was a 1675.
Oh, wow. Great
and
watch.
And I think we paid the guy $3,000 for it. We sold it for $3,500.
Yeah.
That's how close the spreads were.
Yeah.
That watch today is 12 grand,
yeah,
13
yeah.
grand.
Yeah.
It's going up 4X.
Now,
crazy. But back then, Dean, looking at it, it was like, you know, we started from zero, really, rock bottom, like zero.
Yeah.
We sold one watch. And then we sold none, and then none, and then two, and then back to one, and then three.
Were you working a day job while this is going on?
No, this was my full-time gig because I had just sold my last company. So, you know, I was working this thing full-time. So today, fast forward 9.5 years, today we had 40 watches come in from all around the world, mostly the country, but all around the world.
A day?
One day, today, this morning.
Wow.
And we'll have 40 or 50 go back out in one day.
How many watches a month do you
sell?
I mean,
it's crazy to look back and...
Just like 1,000 a month?
Buy and selling, we're probably selling about 1,200.
That's
1,300 watches.
I went to your place. You had like 25 employees, 30 employees.
We've got 35 now, yeah.
That is crazy. And it's a beautiful building.
It's been fun. It really has.
Let's talk about how it works back then, especially. I mean, that had to be kind of sketchy for the people, because you go, I'll take the watch, and they would send it in, right? And,
yes.
And hope it didn't get lost in the mail or stolen. Did that shit happen?
Hardly ever. Thank God. I mean, FedEx is really good at what they do. I mean, they have got it down. So the timing, it was a little bit of luck.
Yeah.
Maybe even a lot of luck. The timing had to come out right. I mean, I think the luxury consumer was last to grasp on to the internet. I mean, let's face it, you're putting an $8,000 watch in a box and mailing it.
Yep.
So first of all, FedEx had to have their crap together and have their program down and systemized and be able to do it in a timely fashion so that they could deliver it. So now they pick up a watch today in Miami at 4 o'clock and it's at my doorstep at 9:30 in the morning.
Is that right?
Yes.
Now, also the people have to trust you and them. So yes. There's that thing where the people are like, I'm not just putting my, especially people in middle America, this is my grandfather's watch. I'm not just putting this in a box and sending it. That's it's crazy.
It's all about trust. It really is.
It really is.
But that's why everything is in our name. And so we don't ever cheat anybody. We are 100% honest. Nobody in our company gets commissioned. No one gets a bonus. If they make money.
Oh, it's all hourly?
It's all hourly.
Oh,
we just pay more money. We've got kind of the Steve Jobs, Apple mentality or philosophy there. I don't want the customer to ever get the short end either way, whether they're buying or selling. And I don't want to commission them because then they'll be apt to try to outsell the customer or try to sell them something they don't need or want. So it's all about just really getting the customer to be happy with what they bought. Or if they sold, building that trust, it's all about trust.
How did you have the knowledge of knowing stuff was real and not fake? Did you have that intern, Greg? Did he know everything? Because you have to know the entire gamut. Even though the internet was in 08, 010, strong as hell, you could type in and go, oh, this is off here. How did you know that stuff?
We had a magic wand that we had patented, and we would wave this magic wand. I'm kidding. You're looking at me like, what? What? I had, again, done watches back in the 80s, so I had a lot of knowledge already. But Greg was 17 years old, getting ready to go to college. Greg didn't know anything about watches. He was a real smart kid. And so I had four people working for me at the time. None of them had any watch experience. So literally, once we got going, and again, we started out really slow.
Yeah.
And built, one at a time, one customer at a time, one watch at a time. And by the way, early on, and still today, we don't deal with dealers. It's not that we don't want to. It's just we want this to be a consumer-driven business.
Right.
Consumer to consumer. As soon as a dealer gets involved, he's got to get his take. He's got to make his 5 or 10%. And that means that the consumer on one end of that transaction didn't get full value. So that's why we're a consumer-to-consumer business. We didn't raise any money, like venture capital money, or we don't have shareholders. We don't have any debt. We're all about the customer.
Yeah.
A lot of the companies that we compete with today, almost every one, have raised $20 million, $40 million, $80 million. So now they're answering to shareholders or investment money.
They're like, how do we do it?
We got to make more money. We're not making enough profits. Pay less, sell for more. That's not what we're about. And I'm thankful that we haven't had to raise money. So it's all been internally funded. So we stay true to our core value. Which is, all about the consumer, take care of them.
I mean, there's so many variables here, though. When you're starting out, you had to get some duds. There's replacement dials, replacement hands, there's polished cases, there's iffy movements, all this stuff. Did you get any fakes and stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the fakes today, by the way,
are insane.
There are some really good fakes.
Insane.
Like back in those days, I could tell a fake from across the room.
A first right away, back then it would be like non-sweep hand.
It's a $50 fake. It's a non-sweep. It's a quartz movement. You could tell. Anybody could tell.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I had one really good watchmaker in downtown Los Angeles. And fortunately, iPhones came around where they had camera capability. So I could, if I had any doubt at all, I could take a photo of the watch, shoot it over to Mike, and Mike would look at it and say, it looks good or it doesn't look good, or let me see a close-up or let me see the movement or whatever. So we would be able to contain any damage, if you will. But we didn't buy a lot of fakes. It's actually scarier today because now they're making these things called what we call super fakes.
Yeah.
And these are $500 Chinese fakes that are amazing.
Have you seen them?
I've seen them up close.
They come with box. They come with hang tags. They come with the hologram stuff. They've got everything. It's like money. As soon as the new $100 bill's out, they've got the new $100 bill going. It's wild, right?
Yeah. So we didn't, fortunately, back in 2009 and 10 and 11, they weren't around. It was the $50 cheap fakes,
yeah,
and they were easy to tell.
You can always tell by the weight.
But then they, the
or
weight,
if you winded it, you go, this is fake.
The feel, it just didn't feel right.
Oh, the band.
Yeah, so they came out with $200 fakes, and they were a little bit more difficult to figure out if they were real or not. But now, today, they've got the $500 fakes. Now, there's not a lot of them, fortunately, out there.
Yeah.
But unless you have a real super trained eye, some good tools, and have the ability to have a real one to put next to it to compare.
Right.
And then you can immediately start to see the differences. There's little tiny subtle differences.
Do you got some experts in your place that are working for you full time?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got, I've got 3 full-time watchmakers, and we probably have 12 service centers around the country working.
Whoa.
Because of our volume.
No, yeah. No joke. You send stuff out to get service to 12 different service places, huh?
Yep.
Wow. Yep. Let's tell the story. You told Bill and I an incredible story about this Neumann watch. Let's get into that. It's famous. You can Google the story. You sent it over to me, but this is a great story, and
you're
talking
about the couch lady watch?
Yeah, let's get into that.
Yeah,
well, so you get calls every day. Let's set it up, first of all. You get calls every day for watches.
By the way, thanks for bringing Bill Burr in the other day. What a
absolutely
guy. One of the kings of comedies.
Yeah.
Really, thanks
legend,
so much.
Dude, legend.
Unbelievable. Both of you, really. Come
oh,
on.
Man, I'm just fucking, I'm in a one-bedroom apartment. I just love stuff, you know?
Yep.
But let's get into this.
So
people call you every day. They got watches.
We get
for
calls
sale
from all over the world.
Yeah.
Egypt, Peru, South America.
Every
London,
day.
For every day, all over. Well, not every day, but we get dozens of phone calls from everywhere. Canada, most of the United States, but this one lady called, and my assistant Sam, that I work with, Samantha, she's terrific. A lot of times people think they've got a 6200, or they've got a 5513 or a 5512 square
crown guard. Daytona.
Yeah, or Paul Neumann Daytona. They think they've got something. And
well, people are watching these antique road show. And then all of a sudden they go, I got that.
Yeah.
And they don't understand the difference.
Or Uncle Joe had one of those.
Yeah.
Or didn't,
and they
didn't
always say it's exact to that.
Yeah.
It's identical. And it never is.
Yeah. 9 times out of 10, it's not. But this one, the photos come over.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now Sam comes in my office and says, hey, Paul, check this out.
A lady calls from Seattle.
She called from Canada.
Yeah.
Somewhere like 2 hours away from Vancouver. And I don't want to give her name out, but that's not important. But she's got this Paul Neumann, and the story goes, and it ends up being a real Paul Neumann. We could tell from the photos immediately.
Right. And you got to be like, oh, my God.
It's great.
What year was the watch?
78.
Okay.
78 Paul Neumann.
So
black
it's got
dial,
screw down crowns.
6241. 6241.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so pump pushers.
Yep.
Black dial. It's in great shape. I mean, it's been worn, but it's not perfectly new.
Yeah.
But it's been worn. It's in great shape. And so she had told Sam the story about how she came to own this Paul Neumann.
Yeah.
She had bought a couch at a swap meet or a flea market somewhere up in Canada, and she had dropped her phone, her iPhone, in between the cushions. And this was like a week before she called Sam, because she had done a little bit.
But she had owned the couch like 2 years, right?
4 years.
4 years.
This
is the crazy part.
Yeah, this is crazy. I guess she never cleaned the couch.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's
not
fishing.
Looking for old, like, Jujubes M&Ms and Doritos.
So she's fishing around looking, and she comes up with this Rolex watch in her hand, and she looks over to her dad, who's in his 90s, and says, Dad, hey, did you have a Rolex watch? And he looked over and said, you know, I couldn't afford it. I've never owned a Rolex watch. Yeah. So she goes, well, geez, what do you think I should do? He said, well, why don't you call that swap meet where you bought the couch?
Yeah.
And maybe someone reported it. Now, this was, again, 4 years.
Yeah.
So I guess she never cleaned the couch.
Yeah.
Obviously. Anyway, she calls over the swap meet or the flea market, and they have no record of it. So she ends up the rightful owner of it now. And so people always ask us, too, like, Paul, how do you find these watches?
How
do you find them? How do you find them? And the answer always is, I don't find them. They find me.
Yeah.
She must have gone on the internet, searched around Paul
Neumann. And you come up first because you're Bob.
Well, I come up high enough, I guess. And right. There's been a lot of media attention. People know I've got a big collection and I pay big money for them and I'm not afraid to. And so she calls us. We talk, we get the story, and sure enough, it's got this incredible backstory to it, and we love it. And the watch is great as well. So my assistant, Sam, flew up to meet her in Vancouver at the airport and took the watch. We took it back on consignment. I told her I could sell it for her, and we asked her what she was going to do with the money.
Yeah.
And you've heard that story, right?
Yeah, that part of the story was hilarious.
Can't make that stuff up. Yeah, that's the real deal.
That's
what she really said.
Yeah.
And so when Rob Report had heard about the story, I knew the reporter, and she called me and she said, "Do you mind writing an article about this? I think people would love to hear the story." And I said, "Sure, I'd love to." She goes, "But I want you to put in that last part."
Yeah.
I said, "What last part?"
On Rob Report.
Yes. The fact that she's going to buy a house. Now, the watch was worth $250,000, so it wasn't, you know, it was a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's like finding a winning lottery ticket. So I said, "What are you talking about? What last line?" She said, "Well, you need to tell people what she's going to do with all that money."
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, you mean about the boob job?"
Yeah.
And the house, buying the house. She goes, "Yes, absolutely." And I said, "Oh, I don't know if I can do that. I'm not sure that's the right thing to do with today and the age and what we're, you know, what's going on." She goes, no, you've got to do that. I said, "All right, let me think about it." So I asked my wife, Carol, who works with us. I asked my daughter, Emily. I asked, you know, all the women that work inside. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to violate anybody or upset anybody. And every single woman I talked to said, no, that's funny. Put it in.
Yeah.
And so as long as you don't use her name or, you know, identify who she is. And so the story ran and it. Sure enough, it went viral. Everybody picked up the story.
That's funny.
I think for two reasons. One, the story.
Yeah.
And two, that it's a Paul Newman Daytona.
Absolutely.
And that was found in a couch.
You ever talk to her again?
She paid $25 for the couch.
$25. Well, you ever talk to her ever again?
I think Sam has.
Yeah.
My assistant.
So how fast did the watch sell?
It took a while. We actually had sold it to one customer. That customer actually wanted a white dial, but had settled on the black. And so he ended up buying it and then had second thoughts about it. So it came back. And then ended up selling it to another. So it sold twice, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it took a while. It took about 3 to 5 weeks total.
So you guys mostly specialize in watches from the last 10 years. That's really what's coming in and out of there. And then you do get vintage watches. But I would say on your website, what I mostly see is, 2005 to now, subs, Daytonas, GMTs, and that kind of stuff, right?
About 85-90% of what we do is modern watches.
Right.
The other 10-20% is vintage.
Yeah.
And that's mostly because of me, just because I love vintage. There's something about, you know, that coolness factor of a 5513 or a 6541.
Yeah. I'm down with just new. To me, it's like get a 15202, a 5711 Nautilus, and an Aquanaut, and then a great GMT Pepsi.
Yeah. And then you're done. Call it a day.
Yeah, you're good to go.
Yeah. What about the Daytona, the 16500?
I can never read them.
Yeah.
I can never read them. And now, that was, to me, the cream of the crop because it was so hard to get. And now that I'm into Patek and AP, I'm like, and also, I just really, all the watches are hard to get now, so it just doesn't have that cachet. Of like, I've got the, you know, there is that part of that thing of like, I got it, you know? I think if they were
easy. You mean the chase?
Yeah, if they were easy to get, you'd just be like, I don't care, you know?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. Now, you're a Porsche guy too, right? Like, we love Porsches.
I want to be.
Yeah.
I had one years ago, and I want to get another one. I love the looks of an old Porsche.
Yeah.
Like a 70s.
Yeah.
But I like driving new technology.
I know. They're so both. It's a 50. Like, I love the GT3 Touring. brand new, but I also love 70s, 80s Porsches.
How do you not like the look? But I mean, the drive, the new models today.
Oh yeah.
The way they handle and take turns. And
oh yeah.
The acceleration and technology behind them.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's crazy.
So why don't you get one?
I'm gonna get one.
Yeah. What are you gonna get? Do you have your eye on what you like?
Probably a Turbo S 911. Yeah.
That's easy to get.
Yeah. The only thing is, I really want a convertible.
Oh God, and so cheap. You can get that cheap.
Yeah, but most of the guys, like the real hardcore Porsche guys,
they don't want a convertible.
They say, don't do it. No,
coupe.
You can't.
You'll get beat up. Only.
You'll get beat up.
You will. You'll lose on that, man.
I don't even care, though. I want to be able to put the top down.
Well, then get what you want.
I know, right? I don't really care. I'm not buying for investment value, just like a watch. I want something I want.
What you got to get then is get the new Targa. That's the best of both worlds, and it is fantastic.
But the top doesn't all the way go
all the way.
It goes
all the way down.
Oh, it does now.
Oh, yeah. I'll show it to you.
The new Targa.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to show it to you online.
Okay.
Get the Targa, because then you have like a hard top. Yep. There's not that noise of the rag top of the shh.
Right.
There's not the weird blind spots, and there's not the fade and the shittiness of that. It goes into the trunk. It's beautiful, and it looks like a vintage Targa.
Yeah.
It really does, and they make these incredible colors, and they make a fast one, too. They make the GT Targa.
So 4 years ago, I was a judge on Rob Report, Car of the Year.
Oh, yeah?
It was a fantastic experience.
Wow.
You start at 7:30 in the morning. You drive 15 cars all day long. You finish at 5 o'clock, you're exhausted, but you drive these incredible cars. Ferrari, and the Porsche, though, that I drove that day.
Oh, yeah.
But they'll give you everything. Every single car that's on the market that's hot is in that Rob Report Car of the Year. And the Porsche, when I get in the Porsche that day, and it was a 911 GT3S, I think.
That GTR, it's 3RS.
3RS.
Unbelievable car. I was taken by it. Unbelievable.
And it ended up winning Car of the Year. We all voted for it. I think there were 60 judges total over a week, hands down. And I, after driving that car, I said, it is unbelievable. We were doing 100 miles an hour around turns.
Oh.
And it hugs the road like there's no tomorrow. I love the car. And it's definitely on my Christmas list.
Well, why don't you buy that one? You know, it's so funny.
I might. Yeah, that might be the one.
Well, let me tell you something.
I want to give the Targa. I'm going to go for a ride in the Targa just to check it out.
I was at this place, Dream Cars, in Vegas. Is that what it's called? I got it right here. They let me drive Ferraris, anything I wanted. I drove the new Ferrari 488, and that's the 458's newer version. And I was like, this is cool, man. I always wanted to drive a Ferrari on the track. And then I drove the Porsche GT2 RS. And I realized Porsche is better than all of them. Because it feels like a radical race machine.
Yeah.
Where the other ones still kind of feel Cadillac-y, you know, like plush. And like a Ferrari, it's really plush. It's not like, whoa!
But would you consider that Ferrari an everyday car? Can you drive that car every day? Probably not, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, people drive them in L.A. every day. It's like a GT2. Are you going to drive that every day? But yeah, you just do.
Yeah, but a Porsche is made to be driven.
It really is.
It's a tool car.
It really is, man. Yeah, they're just screamers and, oh, my God. God, yeah.
You're gonna help me with that.
I want you to get the GT3 RS.
Yeah. You know, I reached out to Spike. Do you know Spike Freston?
I know.
Spike's a big car guy, kind of a watch guy as well.
Yeah.
He was a writer for Jerry Seinfeld, the show.
Oh wow.
He's up here. You gotta meet him.
Oh, I would.
Yeah, I'll introduce you to him.
Well,
great
Jerry's
guy.
A huge Porsche guy, of course. So everyone around him usually gets the disease because, you know, they're like, oh, whoa.
Yeah, because it's a virus. It's catching.
Yeah, yeah.
But Spike's a great guy. Knows a lot about cars. He's got a bunch of Porsches himself.
What are you looking at 2020, where, you know, as Basel World comes around every year, we all wait and hope to see what do you think would really smash the market right now? A Coke, a GMT Coke, a new kind of anniversary sub like the Kermit or the Hulk, a replacement for that? What do you think would really knock people out?
Geez, that's a good question. You know, with the Daytona, when the Daytona came out, we were ready for that.
Yeah.
No one really knew what it was going to look like.
Right.
You know what's funny about that watch is it's the same size as all the predecessors, but it just has the appearance of being a little bit larger because that bezel is just like a 16th of an inch larger.
Yep.
And it's not metal. It's the
ceramic.
And so it has the appearance of popping like the old ones do.
Yep.
So today, I mean, I think Rolex does an incredible job marketing and research to try to find out what's going to work on the market. They don't always hit it right.
Right.
But they keep it surprised. You know, everybody's surprised about what's going to come out. I don't know. I have to give that some thought. Because they came out with the Sea Dweller.
Yep. That was kind of a dud.
Yeah.
It was a dud. And I think because they put the blister on for the date, which Sea Dweller never had. Case was 42. The big watch world's over.
Yeah.
And even if you look at those James Cameron ones, no one's really buying those anymore, those super Sea Dwellers.
We still sell them pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still going. Yeah, guys want them.
I don't hear people talking about it.
You got to be a big guy to wear
That's a
big watch.
Yeah.
Thick.
Yeah, it's like a hamburger, boy, up on there. I really think that if they do a new version of, because Hulk's had its run, and there's still nothing hotter right now for a sub as the Kermit, flat fours, the green with the black. If they did a new version of that,
that Hulk now is going for about double where it was 3 years ago.
You mean
ago.
The Kermit or the Hulk?
The Hulk. Yeah, the Kermits too. But that's understandable. But the Hulk, when it first came out, it was really kind of a soft, you know.
It really was.
Yeah, no one really took to it. It's a lot of green.
Yeah.
Now today, man, it's hot. Everybody wants it. Prices are like $14,000 to $15,000 on it.
Wow. I think the hottest watch to get for somebody that wants to get in and a modern day collector, say you want to get something, and you are a guy who collects. They only made that Sea Dweller 2 years with the ceramic bezel before the new Sea Dweller came out. So they discontinued the Sea Dweller in like 2016. And then there wasn't one. And then they came out with the ceramic just 40 for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got rid of that and came out with this Sea Dweller Red.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a 2 year watch right there that is undervalued right now. And I think if you got it, it's only a 2 year watch.
Yeah.
That's unheard of in the Rolex world to do something for only like 2 years.
You should write your own book.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
That's really, I think, a watch that's going to later on explode.
But they've already done the GMT almost every year the last 5 years.
Yeah.
It might be played out a little
bit. We've done that.
The President, they've already done, like, they've gotten big, they've gotten small. They came out the Day-Day 2. The Daytona's been red hot
for
4 years in a row or more. The Sub. Yeah, maybe they could do something with the Sub. The Air King, I think they came out, and that's doing...
I think what they really should do is, and they should do this, and it would be insane, would be a Day-Date 40 in stainless. You can only get it in gold, platinum, or white gold, or rose gold.
Yeah.
A Day-Date 40 in stainless would make people's heads pop off.
Wow. That's a good idea. That's a great idea.
I'm telling you, I would own that watch in 1 minute. The only reason I don't get it is because I'm not a precious metal guy. I do love the gold one with the honeycomb dial, and I love the platinum with the honeycomb blue dial. Yeah. Those are two beautiful watches.
They're expensive watches.
Yeah. And they dent easy and stuff.
Exactly.
You're out bullshit.
You know why you might be right is because when the Sky Dweller first came out, that was a great watch.
Oh, yeah.
But it's 35, 38 grand.
It's did stainless. And
then they come out with stainless and pop.
It blew up.
It did. It still is, especially with the blue dial.
Yeah, yeah.
They're up to like 23 now, 24.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're hard to get.
Yeah, I got burned by a guy. I sold him one and he ripped me off on some money on it. And I'm still furious.
He never paid you?
I'll tell you who it is when we're off. He's like, these are soft now. I was like, fuck you. They are not soft.
Was it black tile or blue?
It was blue. They are not soft. And fuck this guy. And I say fuck him to, for. I tell everybody about who it is, too. Because, of, you know, we were supposed to be
local,
friends.
Is it a local guy?
No, he's a New York, like, just part-timer rookie dealer guy. Like, but he was supposed to be a friend of mine, which makes it really gross to me. Yeah, that's what makes it gross to me.
That's too bad.
That really is. And it wasn't a lot of money. It wasn't, he didn't rip me off for all the money. He ripped me off for part of the money.
He didn't pay you all of it.
Yeah, and it's just really gross to me, you know.
That's a great watch, though. But following up on your idea here, that could have some legs only because they've done it now before. They did it with the Sky Dweller.
Yep.
A day date.
Yeah.
240 in stainless.
It would be insane.
Yeah, right?
That's dude.
That's a $15,000 watch.
Day date, 40 and stainless, and you stainless. Think?
Yeah, 12, 14, somewhere in there.
Yeah, because they undervalued it in the Sky Dweller.
They did.
I really thought they were going to move it up to 18 grand.
I know. But the market, so this is what the market's telling you. The market's telling you that it's underpriced, even at full retail.
Totally.
That's what the market's going to take it where it belongs.
Right.
I had a neighbor call me 3 years ago when he wanted to buy the new Daytona when it came out. And it was listed, I think, at that time at 11,
12, 11, 12 4 maybe, or 12, door, whatever,
I forget. I think, probably 12.
Yeah.
And he calls me. Now, this is a bond trader. So he knows money. He knows rates and arbitrage and all that. And he says, hey, Paul, can you get me the Daytona? And I said, you know what? They're going for about 17, 18 now. Did you want, the white or the black dial? No, I want the white. He said, but 18, if you have it, it's going to be used, right? I said, it'll be used, but they're brand new. Like, they might have a little bit of scratch here and there, but basically new. Even the ones in the store have a little scratch or a nick on them
because
people have been trying them on. He goes, but I don't get it. Why would I pay you $18,000 if I can get it at the store for $12,400? I said, because you can't get it at the store for
$12,400.
Yeah, but yours is used. I'll give you
$10,000. Oh, my God. His name is
Jim. And I said, Jim, I can't even buy him for 10.
Yeah.
I can't. I'd love to be able to get him to you for 10.
I wish I could get him for 10 all day long.
I'd buy a bushel full of him if I could.
Yeah, yeah.
But he finally came around and he says, I get it. It's supply, demand, and that's where the market's taking it. The market's going to take that Sky Dweller, the blue dial, to 24 because that's where it needs to be at.
Yeah.
Right? And if the market's not in love with it anymore, it's going to come down.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing, looking back over the last 10 years, that's kind of funny, is... We'll have a watch like the Rose Gold Daytona. This was going back 7 years, maybe.
Yeah.
6, 7 years ago. And it's always been a cool watch. It's a nice. Have you ever had one on your wrist?
No. Rose Gold? I love the platinum one. It's my favorite of all time.
But the Rose Gold, if you put it on your wrist, it's magic. It's unbelievable. That ever rose.
Oh, yeah. I love it. My buddy just got the Rose Gold GMT root beer. Yeah, unbelievable watch.
Unbelievable, right?
Watch.
Rolex doesn't mess around. They really don't.
Beautiful metals.
So all of a sudden, we start getting calls for a Rose Gold Daytona like off the chart one day. And this was going back, again, 6, 7 years ago. And we're trying to figure out where all this demand is coming from. All of a sudden, we can't get them fast enough and we can't sell them fast enough. And... they're not even staying in stock sometimes for like a day or less.
Right.
And we find out that Jennifer Aniston or Victoria Beckham.
There it is.
Wore it at a Laker game. She was on side court.
Yep.
There it is. Done.
Same thing happened in the 90s with the Explorer 1. A famous Japanese heavy metal guitar player in Japan wore one on a talk show. That watch all of a sudden was... dude, I'm telling you, it was $3,500.
I've seen it happen.
They were selling for $6,000 in the 90s. And I just sold mine off my wrist. I was like, here, take it.
It happens.
It was crazy.
Yeah, the way it works.
Oh.
So influential. So another funny story, Dean, is maybe 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, right before the 116-500 came out, maybe a year before, we were buying Daytonas for $6,500.
Yep.
Now, the 16520s, the one,
Right before the ceramic.
Right before the ceramic. The 116520s.
Not the Zenith. Rolex in-house movement.
No one cared about the Zenith back then. Really, they were going for $6,000 to $7,000 somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I had 60 of them in my safe, and they were still coming in.
Wow.
And my controller was telling me, we can't buy anymore. We're going to run out of money. Yeah. We got to stop buying these. And my operations person was telling me, no, we got to keep buying. My marketing guy saying, no, we're advertising. We're paying, you know, $6,000 for them. They're coming in. We got to buy them.
Yeah.
We can't disappoint our customers. And so I had this internal fight going on or argument between my staff. And all of a sudden, and I'm not kidding, I had 60 to 70 of them.
Yeah.
And people weren't buying them.
Nope.
They just weren't buying them.
Nope.
I was almost ready to call like a Jennifer Aniston and said, please do me a favor.
Yeah.
I'm going to send you one.
Wear it.
Wear it at tonight's game. I'll buy the ticket. Anyways, I didn't do that. But then the 116-500 hits.
Instantly discontinued.
And all 60 of those watches in my safe blew. They all doubled in value like within a year.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They all disappeared. All sold.
Isn't that crazy?
Instantly.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Oh, yeah. Because people are like, oh, no, I need the old one now. They don't make it anymore.
As soon as the new one comes out, they want the old one.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? Could have got it a week before for $6,000, but now you got to pay $12,000.
Yep.
Wild.
So if you can guess, getting back to your Baselworld, if you know what's coming up and you can buy the old one, it's a 20-30% pop.
Yeah.
But no one knows. Rolex keeps it really secretive. What's coming out?
I still think the most overpriced watch on the market, and this is just you and I talking, is the Kermit Sub. I think it's just overpriced.
Really?
I think because they made that watch for so long, and there's so many out there. I'm like, this is a fabricated market here.
Unless you buy the 2004.
Well, the flat four or three.
That's money in the bank.
That's different.
Yeah.
Or the last year one. I really like with the roulette dial and the darker green bezel.
Yeah.
Those two. But in between, it's just.
You're right.
There's a million of them.
But you know what Warren Buffett says is a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
That's what happens. So you got these bookends. You got the first one and the last one.
Yeah.
And they're going up so high, everything in the middle just goes up with it.
That's a great saying.
A rising tide lifts all boats. And I think that's kind of true with all, you know, Rolexes in general. They're all rising in value.
I can't thank you enough for doing the show. I love you,
I'm glad it came up.
It was great. You came up and did the show. And I just love talking watches, of course, especially with people that are, this is like a handmade episode, man. You're a self-made business that has, you were working your ass off, but you were at the right place at the right time also, that you didn't even know because you were doing what you loved. And that's like me, when I started comedy 10 years ago, it wasn't what it is right now, this second wave, this giant Netflix boom and all that. I was just doing what I loved.
Yeah.
And things happened around. And that's what I love about you and your company. You were just selling watches. And now you're in one of the hottest retail worlds you could be in.
Yeah.
Besides, say, Virgil, Louis Vuitton stuff or Porsche. You are in and you've been in it a long time and you have trust, which is awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Dean.
Yeah, everybody, go to his Instagram, Bob's Watches. That's it, right?
That's it, yep.
And his website, bobswatches.com.
That's it.
And I'm telling you, people hit me up all the time. Do you know this dealer? Do you know that dealer? Just go to Bob and get yourself a Rolex. You know it's going to be real. They'll buy it back from you anytime. And 100%. So there it is. Thank you for tuning in. Keep the candles lit. Don't forget to leave a review and subscribe to the podcast and check out the Patreon channel, patreon.com/Dean Del Rey. See ya.